The next interesting event that happened when the American lieutenant brought an American officer by the name of Captain Picard. I still remember his name. I forgot where I was yesterday, but I remember what happened 60 years ago. So the Captain Picard comes and says, "You," Hans Mischler says, "Yes." "The lieutenant tells me that you know how to speak German well. Do you know how to write?" "Yeah, I know how to write." "I was 22 years old. I knew how to write. I didn't do much writing for the last several years. I didn't have a pencil in my hand. But I tell you what, we are beginning to license German newspapers." You know, after the war, there was nothing. There was no German radio, no newspapers, no city government, no state government, no national, nothing. It was all run by military government of the Allies. We're starting the first German newspaper in Heidelberg, near Mannheim. And I wanted to know whether you'd be willing to, since you know how to write, to become a reporter for the Rhein-Neckar Zeitung in Heidelberg. Well, before you can take the job, the publisher would like to meet with you. I said, fine. So I go to Heidelberg. So it doesn't take very long with my motorcycle. And I meet the publisher. His name was Dr. Theodor Heuss. You know the name? He became the first president of Germany. At that time, he was a publisher of the Rhein-Neckar Zeitung, and I was a reporter. I began to work for the newspaper, and then I learned that in November of 1945, the Nuremberg trial is beginning. So I went to Theo. It was Theo and Ernst, you know, we worked together. And I asked him, "Look, I don't know whether you can do it, but I'd like to become a reporter for the Rhein-Neckar Zeitung to report from what's going to happen at the Nuremberg trial." So he looked at me and he said, "Look, I'll do you one better. There is a German news agency beginning to function." You know, slowly things were coming back at that time. It was probably September, October. "And I will recommend that you become a reporter for not only for our paper, but for whatever papers will be in existence." I went to Nuremberg, I was interviewed, and the person in charge of Dana says, "You got the job." This is how, in November 1945, 7 months after escaping from the camp, I became a Sonderberichterstatter for the Dana in Nuremberg. Make me sugar? Today, I still don't believe it's real. But that is exactly what happened. You heard about, you read about the trial. I covered it almost every day. We had about four or five correspondents for Dana in Nuremberg, and my articles appeared in all the German papers. The Russian prosecution, General Rudenko, opened his part of the trial by asking that a film be shown. The room went dark, and the Russian prosecution had produced a film. The film was called Auschwitz. Now, I was sitting there. The film was taken by Russian army photographers who took over Auschwitz on January 27th, 1945, 9 days after all of us had been evacuated. The only people who were left in the camp were sick people. If they survived, they were freed by the Russians. Now, I sit there, and the film shows where I lived. The barracks, the crematoria, the gas chambers, the bodies. And there was not a peep in the audience. Even the defendants turned away and said, "Propaganda, cannot be real." But they were moved like everybody else was. And then Rudenko, after the film was shown, got up. He says, "This is what I wanted to show in this room," and sat down. The film spoke for itself. It was a short film, hardly any narration. It didn't need any explanation. One day during lunch, I walk out at the corridor, and Dr. Stamer comes over, whose name I knew because I reported. He was the defense attorney of Hermann Göring. He comes over and says, "You are Ernst Michel here? You were in Auschwitz?" I said, "Yes." "And you are now writing for Dana?" I said, "Yes." "Well, I tell you, incidentally, the German defendants were only allowed German newspapers. They were not allowed British or American or other newspaper, only German newspaper. And all of the defendants and all of the attorneys read your articles and the other articles." I wasn't the only one. There were four or five others. And then there were people from all over the world, the press reporting from the trial. So that is how I found out. Stamer told me that Herr Göring would like to know who is this man who writes with the byline Auschwitz number 104995. And he says he would like to meet you. And I said, "What?" I was flabbergasted. And then I thought, I'm a reporter. And wouldn't it be interesting to write about meeting Hermann Göring in Nuremberg? The top Nazi left. So one afternoon after the session was over, Stamer takes me down below where the cells were, and somewhere along the line he told me, "Herr Michel, ich muss Ihnen sagen, Ihr Treffen ist ganz privat. You cannot talk about it, you cannot write about it." I did it on my own responsibility. How he did it, I never found out, and he never told me, and didn't ask him. But he took me to see Göring. I walk in there, and there is Göring getting up, and I ask myself, what the hell am I doing here? Am I going to shake hands? "Mr. Göring, how do you feel? Are you being treated well?" I froze, literally froze. I didn't say one single word. I turned around, asked the MP to let me out of the door. That was my quote, unquote, interview with Hermann Göring. I was never allowed in Nuremberg even to talk about it. But now, 60 years later, I have no problem with it anymore.